Annie Whitehead, part-time music and singing teacher.
Thank you. Can you tell me where you were born and lived as a child?
I was born 30th August 1963 in Germany, British Forces Germany. My father was in the army. We lived there for about 18 months and then moved back to Hampshire and then various places around the world after that.
And what did your parents do?
So my father was in the army and my mother was a language teacher, specialised in French, but she also did a little bit of German and Spanish and Italian, I think, but mainly French, yeah.
Can you remember much about the schools you went to as a young child?
I can remember my first primary school. I was there for a year and I think that would have been 1969. Apparently I went in, my mother used to teach there, and apparently I sat at the back of the class.
Where was that school?
That was Marchwood, just the other side of the water from Southampton. Big army base there, and but it was a local church primary school, it wasn't an army school.
Can you remember anything about the history you did there?
I can't, because I was there slightly less than a year, then we moved out to the Far East.
When you were out in the Far East, did you go to a conventional primary school?
We had a year in Malaya and then a year in Singapore, might have been slightly more, maybe 18 months, and I went to primary schools in both locations. They were, as far as I remember, British Army schools. The main thing I remember about that is because it was so hot, we had lessons in the morning, we went home at lunchtime, and then I believe the local Malaysian children used the school buildings in the afternoon. But again, I remember small parts of that school life, but not very much, because again, each school, I wasn't there for very long. So
you don't remember doing any history when you were at those schools?
The only thing I can remember, and it's a very, very strong memory, and I can't quite place it. I can remember the classroom, and I think it was a school in Singapore. That would have been an infant school, because there was a junior school attached, which I never got to because we moved again. I do remember a very, very vivid memory of drawing the diagram for the crop rotation, being taught the feudal system.
At the infant school?
I'm fairly certain, I could be wrong, it might have been at another school, but I can remember the classroom and it doesn't fit with my memories of later schools, so it must have been one of those primary schools.
So that's very early to be learning that quite complex topic.
And I just remember learning the word fallow, knowing what it meant when fields were lying fallow, and it was from drawing these little strips and rectangles, you know, and the crop rotations. So,
you moved on to the Netherlands for your primary, didn't you, junior education?
Yeah, and I do remember a bit more about that school because I was there over 3 primary school years, but that was a NATO school. So we had British, German, American and Canadian children there, and it was complete from what would now be called reception right to upper six for all the children who were living on the base there.
And you did some history while you were there?
I must have done some history, but again, I can't really remember anything specific. When I was thinking about it for the questionnaire, the thing that sticks in my mind was the trip out to the, I suppose you'd call it a living museum now. It was a place called Bokrijk. And they had, I can't remember whether it was specific periods of history, but there were old farm workers' cottages furnished as they would have been. I seem to recall that there were some people dressed up in costume, but I do remember enjoying seeing the buildings. There were thatched cottages and the lovely Dutch brick and the big Dutch barns, and I say people wandering about in costume, and I just remember loving the atmosphere and sort of being able to literally walk through the door of one of these buildings and be able to so vividly imagine what it would have been like in what, as I say, specific period, I can't remember. If I had to guess, probably pre-industrial, but that's you know. But I remember loving the school trip so much that I dragged my parents back there one weekend. I said, you must come and see this. So that's the main thing I remember from that school.
So from your primary years, really, it's the development of enthusiasm.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
That's good.
And early days, very much enjoying the experience of imagining what it would have been like and actually trying to transport myself back. One other thing I did remember, and I don't think, I did look for them before you came, I don't think I've still got them. At that school, there was a book club, much like my own children have today. They bring home magazines and you can order the books. I remember getting very, very excited about these brand new books that were arriving, and two of them, which I kept for a long time, and I have got them somewhere, but I don't think... No, perhaps in the other room. Two books by Monica Dickens, whose fiction I was aware of, but these were specifically very, very tiny, thin paperbacks designed for probably 9 to 11 year olds. And one was written as if it were a small child who lived through the Great Fire of London. And for the life of me, I can't remember the topic of the other one. But again, very vivid, you know, this idea that you're living through the experience with the child. And again, something that I always remembered was the date of the Great Fire of London because I'd read that book. So that wasn't actually teaching from that school, but it was that period. So, and obviously there were books available for us to get hold of and read and enjoy. So.
That's very interesting. Thank you. You moved on from that school to a boarding school in Yorkshire.
Yeah, well, actually, I might not have mentioned it, but I did, just the best part of a year, my final primary school year, went back to the same primary school at Marchwood. The teachers all remembered me, I didn't remember them, and I'm afraid I can't. The only teacher I can remember is the music teacher. He taught me recorder and said I'd never be as good as my sister, and here I am teaching music in primary school. But I can't remember any of the other teachers, and again, I don't think it was a full year that we were there. So,
so you had quite an interrupted education, really.
Oh, very much so. Yeah.
Now, when you were 13, you were settled more in a comprehensive school then?
Yes, the reason being that we were all sent off to boarding school because of this disruption, and it was considered better if we all stayed in one place for a secondary school education, and boarding school tended to be the answer, and the army helped with the fees. But when I was about 12 or 13, my father left the army and I said, please can I come home? And they said, yeah, okay. He then moved again a few times, so it was not quite so stable as we'd hoped, but yeah, it was a big comprehensive, still in Hampshire, very big, I think a purpose-built comprehensive, and they were quite the new modern thing in those days.
Yes, we're talking 1976, so
yes, yeah.
What sort of history were you taught there?
Again, I've struggled to remember, because I was only there, I think I moved there the Easter of one academic year, then did another full year, and then left halfway through the following year. I don't remember actually the history teacher, so it's very difficult to remember. I would imagine that the teaching was like all the other subjects, which would have been very much... I do remember all the desks, although they weren't the old-fashioned lift-up desks, they were more modern. But the classroom layout was still very much teacher at the front, pupils sitting in rows, perhaps in pairs, or maybe rows of four. So I can't imagine that the history teaching would have been very much different. And I have to say, I'm racking my brains, although I have, either through school or my parents, and then my mother took history right through to A-level, and had intended to study it at university but got higher grading of French, so hence the French. Somehow it was instilled in me. I've always had a very strong awareness of the chronological progression, so that I always knew that the Romans came before the Normans, who came before the Tudors. But I think throughout my whole, certainly up to O-level, it would have been Romans, Normans, Tudors, Stuarts. I don't think throughout my compulsory learning we looked at any other period of history. So probably it was the same things over and over again. I remember even when I graduated, I had a huge gap in my knowledge of the medieval period, early medieval, because I just didn't know anything. I knew the causes of the Wars of the Roses, but I hadn't studied the build-up. And to this day, I have to stop and count and make sure I've got my Edwards and my Richards and people in the right order. So I would have to say we probably did the same standard periods. Might have done a little bit about the Industrial Revolution.
But that's partly because you were moving schools.
Yes, yes.
And this is before the national curriculum, so...
Yes, well, this is when it got complicated. I don't know if I'm jumping ahead here, but I must have still had this deep love of history because I chose it as one of my O-level options. And it was very much 20th century British and European history. So we did a little bit about the Great War, a lot about what was happening in Germany between the wars. And so therefore, I do remember gaining a very deep understanding of the causes of the Second World War, and remembering about America's policy of isolation, what was happening in Germany, inflation. I remember my teacher telling me about German people literally wheelbarrowing the money around because, you know, the currency had been devalued. So I had a very, very strong understanding of the causes of the Second World War, and then subsequently we looked at the Cold War as well. So.
By this time, you were at a secondary modern school in Norfolk. Is that
right? No. Sorry, this was still at the comprehensive. So I did 1 year of this O level course, and then what you're saying about the national curriculum, because that was in Hampshire. I think we were probably doing Oxford Examination Board, possibly,
quite likely, yes.
Or London, perhaps. Then. Unfortunately, though we thought we were settled, my father got a new job and we moved because although he was a soldier, he dealt mainly with ships, and we'd been in the port in Southampton, and then he moved with the docks board up to King's Lynn. So this was slap bang halfway through my O-level course. And unfortunately, when we got to Norfolk, the history course that they were teaching, the syllabus was completely different. It was social and economic history. They were looking at the Industrial Revolution. I had a friend who summed it up. She said, oh yes, you like kings and queens history, don't you? And I said, well, you're definitely sort of political. And it was felt that I wouldn't be able to catch up because the syllabi were completely different. There I'd been studying Hitler and Stalin and the Cold War, and they were learning about the invention of the spinning jenny or whatever. So actually, for a short time, I enrolled at the local college.
Further education college.
The one where Stephen Fry attended for a short while. And it was exactly the same course.
But you'd done in Southampton.
Yes, it was looking at all, covering all the same areas. But I didn't pursue it because, being an adult education course, it was 3 hours a week, all in one go. It was a late night. I was a 15-year-old. The rest of the class were all adults. And I found the style of teaching very different and quite difficult.
Can you explain the difference between your school teaching and the college teaching?
I think, again, at school, now the secondary modern, completely different building, it was going through a real change. My year was the sort of guinea pig generation, actually. It had been the first year that took girls and boys and actually mixed them in the classes, because it was one of the buildings where you had girls' entrance and boys' entrance, and they had up to that point been taught completely separately, and a lot of our classes still were. It was also the first year group that had taken O-levels rather than CSEs.
Was the school moving to become a comprehensive
school? It was, gradually. In actual fact, the following year it merged with the high school next door. and became fully comprehensive, so therefore my sixth form was different again. So it was a bit experimental. They had more pupils than they had room for, so there was a line of about 20 mobile classrooms. And again, it was very much teacher at the front, we were all sitting, you know, pretending to listen. The adult education course was much more relaxed. You could have tea and coffee at your desk, which for me as a 15-year-old was, oh, is this really learning? But unfortunately, it was much more informal, and I think presupposed a certain amount of knowledge already. And what would happen was the tutor would talk to the other students and they would talk in a very informed way with him, whereas I was so used to sitting and waiting to be told what I needed to know. And I found it difficult. I didn't quite have the confidence as well to sort of join in with the discussion. So I did feel it got a little bit sort of moved away from me. It wasn't beyond me. It wasn't that I didn't understand. It wasn't that I wasn't interested. But I think, and now looking back as an adult, I can see I would have no problem with that kind of learning environment now.
So it was appropriate for the adults?
Absolutely, yeah. But I just felt a little bit out of my depth. And as I say, it was a long day, having been at school and then 3 hours in the evening. So it didn't. And so they put me in a geography class instead. And I don't know whether there is still this assumption that if you love and can do history, therefore you must love and can do geography.
And did you?
No! No, again, the aspects where the subjects perhaps do cross over a little bit, that was fine. So I was happy as long as we were learning about the population and the social conditions in Brazil, but rock formations and weather patterns, not so much. So that was it. So I did stay at that school, but as I say, it merged with the high school next door, which had been an all-girls school. And I still wanted to do my history, having been without it for a year. So I'm probably fairly unique in that I went on to do history A-level, not having done history O-level.
Before we launch into the A-level, I wanted to ask you, was there a contrast between the teaching at the Comprehensive in Hampshire and the Secondary Modern in Norfolk?
Difficult to remember. Again, I can't be specific about history. I would say possibly, I wouldn't go so far as to say perhaps it was riot control, but perhaps the discipline at the Secondary Modern was not so great. The school was in a great state of flux when I got there. And there was a sense that the teaching staff were perhaps struggling to cope. As I say, an awful lot of mobile classrooms, this sort of experimental phase. I remember particularly the English teacher panicking because I'd done 1 year of English O-level at my previous school in Hampshire. And all the pupils this would have been top set English O-level, but it was the first time that any pupils had been entered for the O-level exam, and they were all double entered. So all the students were doing O-levels and CSEs.
Oh, right.
Now the CSE obviously had the coursework element, which then came in when they combined, you know, the GCSE. And I, of course, had done no coursework. And I remember the teacher panicking, saying, oh, you know, you won't be able to do the CSE exam. And being very logical as a 15-year-old, I said, well, I wasn't doing it before. And actually, I did very well with my English O-level, but I remember there was this sense of panic. And I didn't do the English CSE, but on all the other subjects, I was double-entered. I had dropped French at my previous school, probably as a reaction to having lived with a French teacher all those years, and had to redo it. I had to take it up again in the fifth form as a CSE because everybody was doing it. So much confusion. I didn't settle. My mother was teaching at the same school, which is difficult when you're in the fifth form, particularly a subject that nobody liked because they were all being forced to do it. I do remember knowing that the history was being taught in one of those mobile classrooms.
So does that mean that you wouldn't have had access to very many visual sources or TV and video, that sort of thing?
No.
Video was just coming in at the end of the 70s.
It was. I do remember. It's not strictly history, but again, it was something that formed my opinions very strongly. I had a fantastic English teacher at my comprehensive in Hampshire, and we were reading The Go-Between, which is funny, set in Norfolk, where we subsequently moved to. And I do remember being shown in batches the film version with Alan Bates and Julie Christie, and I remember falling in love with the whole story. I say it was lovely. Actually, my parents ended up living very, very close to where the film was made. I didn't really like, it's L.P. Hartley, I think, isn't it, The Go-Between? I didn't like the writing style. I wasn't a very good reader at that time. But what I do remember is having it brought to life on film. And the film is very, very true to the book. But again, loving the sense of period. And for a long, long time, it was one of my favourite periods of history. Between the Wars, wasn't it? I think just after the First World War. And the fantastic hairstyles, the long dresses, and the social rules at the time. And I remember getting caught up with this whole idea of love never being able to cross the social boundaries, and the scandal of this aristocrat falling for a farm labourer. So I took it very much from a history perspective, not from a literature angle. So.
One of the things that I was going to ask you about was textbooks, because I wanted to ask you to remember them, but you have got a selection of
textbooks.
Well,
actually, reading through this list of questions, thinking about textbooks, one word just came up in my mind straight away, and it was Longmans. So I assume that they must have produced very many history textbooks.
One of the major publishers in the 70s.
Yeah. And then I remembered these books, which coincidentally are Longmans. One of the books I remember being very much a feature of my early history education was R. Alan Brown's The Normans. And I was very surprised to be reacquainted with it on my degree course.
Oh.
Because I thought, or him, presumably wrote more than one book, but the name was one that I was very familiar with, going back as far as primary school, I think. So it was R. Alan Brown, The Normans, and I can remember the picture on the front from the Bayeux Tapestry. And these books, which I loved, which is why I still got them, and they probably do say property of the school. These books, Modern Times, were the textbooks we were given the first year of my O-level course at the Hampshire Comprehensive. So it was very much 20th century European history. We had done the Great War, and we must have had some textbooks. The one thing I do remember is being surprised later on to hear that schools were having problems in the 80s with not having enough textbooks to go around. That was never an issue. I don't ever remember being told that I'd have to share. Mm. All the way through my school life, it was very much a question of the start of the term or the start of the year. The teacher would stand at the front and hand out, one child for each row would be a pile of textbooks. And they were yours to keep and to take home, and in most cases hand back when you left.
You've got four there.
I hang on to this. I don't know why, but I loved them. I loved the idea that each book covered a separate aspect, but they were all interconnected. So we've got Modern Russia by John Rowbottom, I remember loving learning about Russian history, and it's something that I took up again later on. Russia and the Tsars, Lenin and the Bolsheviks, Lenin in power, Stalin, obviously, the Great Purges, going right up to Khrushchev. So very detailed, very interesting, and I do actually remember reading it from cover to cover. So
it's detailed. It's got photographs in. Did you find the photographs helpful when you were using it? Can you remember?
Yes. What I liked is being able to picture what it was we were learning about. It's something that I've never really considered actually until now. But always I say the word Lenin to me, I can picture his face. This particular period, although it's not one of my favourites now, was the time I really became aware of how much I loved history, and history that I had chosen to study. Having some say in what you're learning is very empowering. The teacher, I can't remember his name, but he was one of those really inspirational teachers, and a lot of the things he told me I still remember. He explained the theory of the balance of power, and I remember his analogy. He said, you know, two cavemen each have a rock in their hand. One hurls the rock, it may hit, it may miss, and then the other one can throw. And he was explaining how that balance remained very equal throughout history. Bows and arrows, gunshot, and then explaining how the nuclear age sort of changed all that, because it took away the opportunity for retaliation. You can fire a bow and arrow, well, you fire the arrow, you don't fire the bow, and your opponent will have the chance to fight back. And he was explaining how in the modern age that all changed with Hiroshima, Nagasaki. And I still remember his description of a nuclear bomb landing, bonk. But explaining how it now became a question of bluff and double bluff, and we've got this. You know that we won't use it. Ah, well, we've got it too. So now you know that we might use ours, but we might not, because we know you've got it. And I remember him explaining that, and it was something that stayed in my head. And whether I loved the period and was lucky to have a good teacher, or whether the teacher made me love the subject, I'm not too sure. But, you know, I had chosen the O-level option before, presumably, we knew who would be teaching it. But he was a fantastic teacher. And I also remember him explaining, I was just looking at that photo of Lenin there, but it reminded me of the way he explained about Hitler. And he told, and I actually told my own children this just the other day, that all the newsreel you see of Hitler addressing the crowds, you see him shouting, very angry, whipping the crowd up almost into a frenzy. And I remember him explaining that Hitler didn't tend to start his speeches like that, that he would start off quite quietly and then build up. And again, it was little things like that that stuck in my mind. I liked knowing those interesting details, and it did help to colour my perspective of the period. Because I suppose also that was the beginning of this idea with history: don't believe everything you see, don't believe everything you read. You know, just have a look around the corner, see if there's something behind what you're being told, what you're seeing. And again, this idea that with newsreel, television in the 20th century, even the way we learned about it was different, because we had different resources. There were the newsreels, but not to believe it necessarily, because all you tend to see, the forerunner of the soundbite, I suppose, is Hitler in full rant. And he said, you know, it wasn't like that. And again, as I said earlier, really, really good grounding in the causes of the Great Wars of the 20th century.
I just wanted to ask you about the style of this book, because it's so different to what children would be using today in history.
Right.
You've got lots of text in each chapter which tell you the story, and there are no exercises, no sources at all. Which would be
true.
In the modern textbook.
Yeah.
But you were saying how the propaganda side of things, you started you thinking about history can be seen from different perspectives.
Yeah.
So do you think this helped you to see the alternatives, or it was the teacher that was bringing
it about?
I think
it was the teacher. I think certainly at this time it would be very much a question of the books gave you the facts that you needed to know. But I do think, I have to say, I am a traditionalist. I don't feel that the history teaching I had let me down, because obviously somewhere along the line I developed a great love for all things historical. May have been my teaching, may have been, as I say, there was lots of educated support from home. As I say, my mother had a great love of history. She was, again, she'd been taught in a similar way, but I have to say, actually, but perhaps when we move on to talking about sixth form, there were differences. She had done the same periods of history for A-level than I did, but new thinking had come to the fore. And looking back through her old exercise books, I said, oh, well, we're not taught that anymore. So ideas and thinking had changed. But obviously something struck a chord with me somewhere along the way. And there was something very lovely about these books.
This one's...
Hitler in Germany, B.J. Eliot, which is a name that still seems very familiar to me. Not sure why. Again, entirely the same format, as you say, lots of text, a few photos.
They're broken up with headings,
yes.
Which is actually something more typical of the 70s and the Longman series.
Right.
Earlier textbooks in the 60s would have had unbroken text.
I probably would have struggled with that. I wasn't a great reader. I still have the distinction of having an A-level in English literature, not having read all of my set texts from cover to cover. I did struggle to keep interested with reading. I'm quite a good reader now, although still very slow. So, yes, these being broken down into chunks. But it was, I think for me, the appeal was the idea that here was information, and it was being given to me, and I could take it in that format.
Were you asked to write summary notes from this book? How was it used by your teacher?
We probably read it. Perhaps we were told to read certain sections at home, and then we would discuss it in the lesson. I don't remember at that stage taking copious notes.
Did in the lessons... The teacher didn't just stand and dictate notes to you then?
Not at that stage, no. That was probably more when I got onto A-levels. I do remember he was standing at the front. I don't remember doing much, certainly at O-level, not sort of group work. So I think it probably was standing, talking. Obviously there would be the blackboard. Excuse me, we didn't have whiteboards in those days. Dates we must have learnt. Essays, the kind of things we'd probably talk about something during class, and then homework would be to write an essay about. And a typical topic might be outline the major causes of the First World War. There weren't very many essay topics where you'd be given a statement and then discuss.
That's more advanced.
That was, and again, that was something that I do remember struggling for a long time with my A-level courses, either because the style of teaching was different or because I had had that gap where I hadn't done it for a year. So it's hard to say.
You've got two more textbooks here. Mussolini in Italy by C.C. Bain Jardine.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether I read this one.
I was going to say it's a slightly more unusual topic.
I do remember doing Mussolini. I remember anecdotes. I remember the very vivid imagery of what happened when Il Duce and his mistress, whose name I can't remember, were caught. And I do remember the teacher showing us that very famous photograph of their bodies hung upside down. So I do remember, again, my knowledge of time, place, context, very secure. I knew what happened when and why people thought it had happened, and the connections between all these subjects. I say Mussolini in Italy I didn't find as interesting, but I must have been listening.
And then your final one?
Yeah, Roosevelt in the United States by D.B. O'Callaghan. Again, same series, same format, photos, posters. The Wall Street crash, 1929. I remember learning an awful lot about that. The idea of America staying out of both of the major wars until later on, and their reasons for coming into the war.
This is
a map. Federal government. What is it?
How the United States is governed.
The sharing of power between the federal government and the governments of the individual states.
It's a map, but it's also a chart, isn't it? With various essential information described.
Looking at that now, I don't remember it. It's probably quite old-fashioned now. I don't think information would be displayed like that probably nowadays. In fact, it's not brilliantly clear. Is it?
An early attempt, at charting information. Yeah.
I'm not so sure at that age that I would have bothered turning the book on its side to study that. Although, interestingly, nowadays, I know that my children have done these tests to determine whether they're visual learners, kinesthetic learners. And I looked through the tests, and it would seem I am very much a visual learner, which may explain why I did struggle to... I didn't have any difficulty reading. My spelling has always been... apparently I had a very high reading age. But I didn't enjoy reading. And I still find that I am a slow reader. It takes me a long time to absorb the information. And although it won't be clear on the recording, obviously I use my hands a lot to talk and to demonstrate. And I do like to see in order to learn. So I never got on with maths because I used to say, hang on a minute, I need to know what's happening to these numbers. And the teacher would stand at the front and say, well, you do this to that number and that happens. Okay, no, what's actually happening? So, yeah, I am very much a visual learner, and yet that doesn't particularly appeal to me, that type. Because as you say, it's neither one thing nor the other, and I think there's better ways now of laying that out.
In fact, in today's textbook, you would see much more visual stimuli in the books.
Yeah.
But obviously there was enough for you to
there
get
must
with
have been.
The photographs.
There
you
must
remember.
Have been, and it must have fired my imagination. Of course, the other thing that I did sit and watch, we were very, very lucky when I was living in Holland. Actually, I should say the Netherlands, to be more correct. They did show... the BBC series of War and Peace. And so again, from about the age of 9 or 10, I was very aware of things like the Battle of Borodino, what happened to Napoleon, and how the march through Russia was the finish of him. Again, it's not a book that I would ever choose to sit down and read. But again, a great sense of period, and it was the history that I loved. I remember asking my mother, sorry, I'm backtracking a bit here, but you'll see why all the characters just spoke as if they were English, but the French maid had an accent. And my mother explained that really she would have been speaking Russian with a French accent, whereas the Russians obviously were all talking Russian to each other. So I very much enjoyed that. And again, the beautiful costumes, and I had a real sense of how people looked at the time that this was happening. We also saw the entire series of Elizabeth R with Glenda Jackson. That was shown on Dutch TV. And the reason I was thinking about that was The World at War with Laurence Olivier narrating. That was shown, and I remember sitting and watching that round about a similar time. Whether it was a repeat, but it did sort of link in with my O-level course. So again, lots of old black and white footage. I don't think they really tended to show the colour films. I think they've been unearthed in more recent times. But yes, there must have been just enough visual stimulus there.
Can I ask you if you did any trips to historical places?
At this time, or just generally?
To O-level. From school.
I remember visiting Hadrian's Wall and Halstead's Fort, but that was at my boarding school, which was in Yorkshire, so it was quite near. The visit to Bokrijk when we were in the Netherlands. We went on a trip to London, but that was actually sixth form. Do you want to talk about sixth form?
Yes, we'll move on to sixth form now, yes. So you chose to do history at A level.
I did. So as I say, having not done it for a year, I then probably had quite a limited choice of A levels anyway, because whilst I coped with maths, I didn't enjoy it. I did scrape my O level maths, but and science, not my strong point. So, and having had an awful experience revisiting geography. So I wanted to do the history A level.
Did you do English as well?
Yes, I did English as well.
And this is at a new school, Springwood
High
School?
Well, this was the amalgamation of the I can't remember its name, but it was the local high school, girls' high school, and the secondary modern, which was on the site next door, and they then combined to make one almighty split site comprehensive, and was given a new name of Springwood High, so incorporated the secondary modern and the girls' high school. So the very few boys in the sixth form, very few from the secondary modern in the sixth form, actually. And a lot of those only stayed on doing one-year courses. But for whatever reason, I was accepted onto the A-level course despite not having done the O-level course. Which I think, to be fair, looking back, when you're learning new periods of history, you're not building in quite the same way, perhaps, as you would in other subjects. If you've got the skills, which I didn't have at the start. I did struggle with the courses initially because I didn't quite get what was required of me. I think that was the thing. And I think it was this idea of moving from sort of very straightforward narrative history, and even though we would talk about things like the causes of the First World War, the causes of the Second World War, to a certain extent it was still regurgitating facts, figures, what you'd been told. We perhaps didn't have to think for ourselves quite so much, whereas with the A level, it really was more, here are the basic facts, now you've got to decide what you think. So I did struggle with that initially.
What were the topics that you were being taught?
Now, this is when it got much more interesting. We did English history and European history. They were taught by different teachers. I should say British history. My British history teacher was newly qualified. She had done history at Durham University, so she was only a few years older than us, and she was incredibly enthusiastic about her subject, and I do remember enjoying her lessons massively. We were still moving around, sometimes in the old high school, sometimes down in those old mobile classrooms, but she was wonderful. And my European history teacher, his claim to fame was that he had been an extra in the film Song for Norway, which was about Grieg, the composer. Mr. Smart, I always remember his name. And that was European history. So they were taught very separately.
Was he a more traditional teacher?
He was. I remember thinking he was ancient, so he was probably about 35, 40.
But his approach to things?
Yes. Although he wasn't very stiff and formal in his teaching style, but obviously there was perhaps slightly more formal. There was discussion, but I would think we were perhaps more at ease with the other teacher.
You did mention dictation. Were you doing dictation in the sixth form?
Yeah, it was. Again, both the teachers would probably not stand. I think they tended to sit and give us the basic facts. But it wasn't non-stop dictation. So it would be a question, and again, it took me a while to get into the habit of learning, really, when you needed to take notes. So it wasn't, as in university, there was a very different setup. If you were being lectured, then you were in the lecture theatre and you knew for an hour, 2 hours, you would be writing furiously. It wasn't like that, but I was a bit surprised that we did have to write so much. And it took a while to learn. What it's almost as a second guessing, will I need to write this down? It did become obvious what we used to do. If one of us was off sick or away, then another would take notes using carbon paper. So you get a very faint copy of someone else's notes, and it quickly became obvious that my friend Mary, for example, would write down different points that perhaps I would have ignored. So personal style really started to emerge at that point.
Did the teachers give you any reproduced notes or handouts?
Not that I recall, but I do still have my A-level notes in a lever arch folder just at the other end of the house, if it's something you'd like to see.
I might have a look at those, yes. But you were asked to write essays, presumably.
Yes, we were. British history, we were, again, very much doing Tudors and Stuarts. But obviously in much more detail, and it essentially was first year six was the Tudors, second year six was the Stuarts. But I think really the Tudors was a much more familiar subject. I think this was the one that we'd done almost continuously. The Stuarts, not so much so. But we got right into the Civil War. I say the Stuarts actually probably stopped with the Glorious Revolution, didn't do Queen Anne, and actually that's where my interest in British history really stops, at the point where the monarchy became just more of a figurehead and the politicians took over. I loved learning about the Civil War. We got into wonderfully detailed discussions, and I do remember the teacher telling us all about all the different religious groups that sprang up, And again, I was making my son laugh the other day because I said, no, these are genuine, you know, the levellers, the shakers, the quakers, the diggers, the few that I can remember.
Were you given extracts from or actual books by historians to read?
No, not so much for A level. I think we did see some facsimile pamphlets. I'm trying to remember the name of the chap who kept getting thrown in prison for making his pamphlets. Lilburn. Might have been him. Certainly, we did learn a lot. I mean, the printing of pamphlets and things, I remember being taught how important that was at the time. And we were also learning about how different historians interpreted the Civil War differently.
Yes.
The idea that it was the first Marxist revolution.
So that was conveyed to you by the teacher. You didn't actually read the books.
We perhaps maybe should have done. Perhaps we were given a reading list. But again, I tended not to, if I could avoid it.
So do you think you were well taught then?
Yes.
So you're well prepared for the exam?
So much so that when it came, as I say, we just had the exams at the end of the 2 years. And I really was bored by Elizabeth I. I found aspects of her reign quite confusing to remember the details. And I wasn't overly interested in the subject matter somehow. I much preferred the earlier Tudors. I liked the to-ing and fro-ing. Come out, Catholics, you're all right now. Oh, no, back in your hiding holes. I actually really, really enjoyed learning about Edward VI and his advisors and all the... Try to remember that. Was it the six articles or... the new rules on religion that were but Elizabeth I, not so keen. But I actually was able to ignore all questions about Elizabeth in the exam. I would say maybe 8 questions in the exam paper, 4 of which would have been about Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. And I remember my teacher saying, are you sure? You know, you're going to be stuck. And I said, no, I really... So obviously I did revise a little bit, but I concentrated on all the other things. And obviously enough...
So you got your 4 questions on the Stuarts and the early Tudors.
Yeah. Same with European history. We covered... I was really, really surprised. My son at the moment is doing the International Baccalaureate, and we went to school to be taught what this entailed.
Yeah.
And the IB coordinator is actually a history teacher, similar age to myself. And he was saying, oh, it's very, very different from the A-levels. But when he started talking about what the history syllabus for the IB would be, and I said, that doesn't sound very different from my A-levels at all. And he said, not A-levels as you remember them, A-levels as they are now. And he said it's perfectly possible now to go right through GCSE and A-level only having studied the 20th century. Which staggered me, and he said, oh, aren't IB, I mean, none of my children is the slightest bit interested in history, but he said the IB course now, you'll learn Russian history and European and Oriental. And I said, yeah, I did. And European was wonderful because we did the unification of Germany, the unification of Italy, Peter the Great, Catherine the Great, all the benign despots, Joseph II and Maria Theresa of Austria, the American Revolution, the American War of Independence, Prussia, Frederick I and Frederick II. That's about it.
That's a huge syllabus,
It's huge, but very much connected. Because we would then, for example, have essay questions like comparing the policies of Frederick II of Prussia and Joseph II of Austria. So there was this thematic link, we would compare Peter the Great to Catherine the Great, the centralisers, and the people who, you know, gave localised power. So it was very much compare and contrast. Once we'd got the basics, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. What I couldn't get to grips with was French Revolution and Napoleon. So again, I just left it out and answered questions on the other subjects.
You mentioned in the survey that you did this trip to the Tower of London, and you also completed a project on the Celts.
Yes.
Was that an individual study?
It was a requirement of the A-level that you did a project which was based on independent research, and it could be any topic. Didn't have to be something that we were covering in lessons. And the idea of the Celts appealed to me. I thought it was wonderfully mystical and, I don't know, just very different. Perhaps romantic. I love the idea of this ancient, long ago people. And I remember going off to King's Lynn Library and getting out loads of books. My grandfather was a great help, although he'd been an English master and eventually a headmaster of a grammar school in Halifax. But again, an abiding love of history, and he had loads of books which he gave me. In fact, I've got one here. I can just give you an example, sort of things I was looking at. Celtic Britain by Lloyd Lang. I think we might have progressed to colour illustrations. Oh no, still black and white. And I discovered that, as I've got the project somewhere as well, that what I thought I knew about the Celts was wrong. And I thoroughly enjoyed it, learning all about the Latin culture, finding out where the Celts came from, which surprised me, that they had come originally from, well, I think they were almost Asian. It was that far across. I really, really enjoyed it. So as I say, going off to the library, I do remember a book by Nora somebody. Apparently she was quite a leading authority. And I really did enjoy the process of, perhaps, I mean, this was maybe the forerunner of university study, getting the books that I felt I needed, seeing whether they would be useful, and then reading through, making my own notes, and then turning that into a representation of my understanding. And the finished product was quite a lot of writing.
Did you illustrate it?
Yes, I did. I can't remember how. I mean, I've got it just down there. I could show it to you. I'm just trying to remember how I would have reproduced maps, because photocopying was not something that everybody had in the... I mean, this was 1981, I took my A-levels. So whether we used photocopier at the library, or perhaps my father had one at work. I do remember putting illustrations in.
Did you have support from your teachers for your individual study? They monitor what you were doing? Did they suggest books for you to read?
Do you know, I honestly can't remember. I suspect not. I do have a memory of it really being all my own work.
That must have been hard for students who didn't have parents or grandparents.
I should imagine it would have been. Yeah.
Resources.
I was very lucky. I remember my mother getting quite upset with me because I would be talking about this quote and that quote, and she said, "Actually, dear, it's a quotation." but yes, I mean, I actually wrote my own footnotes and things, and it was very, very very different from the schoolwork I'd done up to that point. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
You were mentioning about the Tower of London. How did the Tower of London visit fit into your A-level studies?
Right, it was just a trip for the history students. It wasn't, I know nowadays they tend to combine, the English and history departments seem to double up a lot. We went down to the Tower of London. It was actually for a series of lectures. I'm thinking on the Civil War. I remember, yes it was, because I had this lovely image of Charles I having tried to elicit Scottish support and having failed, and coming back to London very dejected, only to find, I can't remember whether it was, I'm trying to link it in, was it, did he come back to find that some of his advisors had been impeached or something was going on? And I had this wonderful image of him sort of wandering forlornly back from Scotland with his hands in his pockets. I actually felt very sorry for him at that point. And that was something that one of the lecturers had said. And that was, although it was somewhere within the Tower of London itself, but a very modern room. Almost looked like a cinema. It could well have been, actually. They may well have had a cinema screen. But I remember lovely plush velvet seats that we were sitting on. We were actually comfortable for a change. But again, very much a lecture. We sat and we listened.
Were there historians from the universities who were doing the lectures?
I presume they were. I don't think they were Tower of London staff. I think this was a thing that had been organised and hosted by the Tower of London.
And that was for sixth form pupils?
Yeah. And there must have been other schools there.
Just to sort of finish, I wanted to ask you whether you thought that the history you were taught at school helped you to feel proud of being British in any way?
Not consciously. No, not at school. I think that possibly came more with my degree course, where we very quickly fell into camps whether we were pro-Saxon or pro-Norman.
So you did early medieval history?
Yes, I did. In the first year... we had to do... there were certain fixed elements. Every year you had to do an element of British history. Mm. And there was also a compulsory module in the first year. It was almost the history of history, the theory of history.
Which university were you at?
Well, it's actually it's in a university now. It was the Polytechnic of North London. And I had the great privilege, I didn't realise at the time, my tutor in early medieval and dark ages history was Anne Williams. I'm still in touch with her now. She was a fantastic teacher, real specialist in her subject. She's written loads of books since. And in the first year, that was the Dark Ages, which I then took on in my final year. She took me for... we did feudal history, where I discovered really what the feudal system may or may not have been about. And that was wonderful. And I do say to children, if you can just get through the boring bits of school history and get out the other side, and that's when it becomes fascinating. I mean, the arguments as to whether pre-conquest England was feudal, what actually constitutes feudalism. And I realised very quickly it had precious little to do with those little drawings of fields. But I had the grounding, the basic knowledge. It all made sense. But then we learnt about Charlemagne, the Franks, right up to Stephen and Matilda in that option. But following on from the Dark Ages, the third year module was 10th century England, which is now what I would consider my period, which again, just don't get to learn about at school. I did go in to the primary school where I teach now. They had an option in years, it was 3 and 4, so it was a Key Stage 2, just early Key Stage 2, of doing a short history module, and it could either be the Second World War or the Saxons and Vikings. And I happened to be in the staff room, and I mentioned that was sort of my period, and would you like to come in and talk to the children? So I spent a whole day with them, talking about the Viking invasions, what life was like in Anglo-Saxon England. I took in some goats and sheep's milk cheese for them to try, and we had a fantastic day. They'd been studying Sutton Hoo, so I've got some pieces of jewellery, the sort of replicas of the kind of thing that were found at Sutton Hoo. And I tried to keep it as visual as possible. And we finished off, I reproduced some maps and got them to try and find maps of their local, you know, literally the village over the road there and this area, trying to find Saxon and Viking place names, just to give them a sense as they wandered through, literally through the streets of their local town, knowing that if they saw this word or that word, knowing whether it was Saxon or Viking. I was very struck at the end when they started asking questions that very few of them had any sense of the period that we'd just been discussing. And I sensed that there was that the knowledge, whilst it's very detailed, and then they really learn about what it was like to live in those times, excuse me, whichever times those might be, they don't know who came when and after whom. And one of my own children said, "Does that matter?" And I said, "I think so. Because if you don't know how people were living and what the political climate was before, you can't know what the impact would have been of the changes of regime, of new cultures coming in." And throughout, as I was thinking about this before you came, throughout my whole life, I always seem to have been aware of who came when and what happened and why, even if it was in very simple terms. I've always known that the Wars of the Roses were caused because there were the Yorkists and the Lancastrians, and I knew that it wasn't that the people who lived in a Lancashire town got upset with the people who lived in a Yorkshire town, that it was different branches of the royal family. To this day, I can't remember exactly. I can work through something to do with the Beaufort family and John of Gaunt. I have to sit and that, actually, I have to say, I have since educated myself on that period of medieval history, because I never learnt it. I say, the closest I got, I did Henry I, Henry II, and Stephen and Matilda. But not as a British history thing, as part of the feudal era. But I never really learnt beyond that. Henry IV, Henry V, haven't done. Touched on Henry VI at A-level as a run-up to the Tudors. And I've since taught myself, and to this day my knowledge is not as good.
I'm sure that you were, in a sense, completing the circle. When you went into that school, you were telling how you, in your primary years, had a sort of fractured experience of history, but you'd drawn a little bit from it, where you were going back into that school and taking the gift of the imagination that you'd found so important back to those children.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, actually. I keep saying, if you'd ever like me to do it again.
Thank you very much, Annie.
You're welcome. Lovely.